Good morning, everyone. It is September 20th, 2021. This is your home away from homeroom, the ADK homeroom, and I am your host, Frank. Can't wait to get into it today. We have a wonderful by request episode to start things off here. We're talking about what your kids are learning in school. This is going to be a whole series. One moment. We seem to have a cat that has escaped containment. Oh my goodness. It's like herding cats around here. All right, there we go. And I am still dealing with the sniffles today. Allergies did not get in the way of a wonderful weekend. We had a fantastic weekend. More about that in the other episode of this podcast that I'm putting up today. We are going to have two episodes today, so go listen to that. But it was a beautiful weekend here in the Adirondacks. The leaves are turning color. I think we're going to hit peak color sometime in the next 7 days or so. Got in a wonderful soccer tournament, a lot of play dates with the kids and the dog and getting outside on the trails. So absolutely fantastic weekend. But as the weather turns, sometimes the nose drips. Unfortunately, these things go together. It's not a fantasy world where you can separate things like that. But hey, we're getting through it. So as I said, we are going to have a series here on what kids are learning in school. I've spent the last 25 years in the classroom, so I feel like we have a pretty good, or I have a pretty good handle on that. I'm going to share it with you. We're going to go over every subject. We'll talk about foreign language. We'll talk about science, math, English, history, or social studies. Talk about computer science. Spoiler alert there. Almost none of them are learning computer science. No kids are learning computer science because the schools don't make them learn computer science. And when they do learn computer science, especially at schools where I am like right now, it's almost impossible task for the teacher to teach an effective computer science course because there's only one, maybe two, and the disparity in skill levels among the kids coming into class is nuts. It's the highest disparity you've ever seen, the greatest disparity you've ever seen. Some kids come in already knowing how to code, to do things at a very high level. They come in knowing Python, they come in knowing C, and then other kids come in knowing absolutely nothing. They've never even used Scratch or just some sort of coding block program. They have no clue. So it's very hard in computer science right now, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that today. We're going to focus on something a little bit different because those academic subjects are not all that kids learn in school. In addition to those academic subjects, there is what people in the biz, I suppose, call the hidden curriculum or the meta curriculum. There's also the socialization and the friends aspect and things like that, but the hidden curriculum or the meta curriculum are things like what rules are important to follow, how to get along with teachers, how a society functions with rules, how to negotiate the politics of friends and cliques and hierarchies, both among peer groups and among outgroups. And so things like how to be disagreeable, right? It can be very important to learn when to be a disagreeable. Disagreeable associated with many positive outcomes. Disagreeability is in careers. So how to be successful, how to plan for success, obviously, but also when you can be disagreeable, when you need to work hard, when you don't need to work hard, and how to get results based on working hard or not working hard. So a big part of the hidden curriculum also is how to maintain your own mental health, how to survive. It doesn't do you any good to be very successful by some standards, but be torn up inside about it, be very upset, be miserable every day. So a big part of that hidden curriculum is happiness, right? Well, unfortunately, kids are getting very mixed messages here. On the good side, one of the good messages that they're getting is that mental health is important. And a lot of the taboo surrounding mental health is dropping away now, which is great. Kids are picking up on this. Certainly, they're not afraid to discuss mental health. And maintaining positive mental health is helped by talking about it. As long as you talk about the right things, as long as you approach it with the proper mindset, and you put in the work. Hashtag do work, son. But There is a negative message that's accompanying this. And the negative message is that it can be a very good thing to have poor mental health. Yes, they get that message all the time. You get extra privileges. You get extra attention if you have poor mental health. You do not need to look any further than yours truly, for example. I was all set this year up until the day before we went back to school, the day before teachers' meeting started. I was set to be the only guy in school who did not have to wear a mask in the classroom. And how did this come about? Because I had such a poor mental health state with respect to masks. I had three medical professionals sign off on an Americans with Disabilities Act exemption for me. It was a somewhat expensive process. And I was going to be a rock star, right? The only one unmasked in the building. Would that have given me attention? Absolutely. You better believe it. And as they say, like the frog in science class, he died for attention, right? High schoolers are willing to die to get attention. Unfortunately, sometimes literally. So hide your Tide Pods, right? Anything for a like, comment, subscribe. People are willing, especially teenagers sometimes, to take risks with a capital R for that extra attention, for those special privileges. So that is, in fact, one of the worst messages surrounding mental health in this hidden curriculum, is that the worse your mental health is, the more extra privileges, extra attention you get. Another example, extra time on tests. Extra time on tests is a constant factor in high school these days. I don't know how old you are, but if you haven't been in high school in a long time, there are constantly extra time exemptions. And we're not just talking about classroom tests. It's the SAT, it's the ACT, it's the big tests like that. So who gets extra time on tests? Well, people in many cases with poor mental health, if they have test anxiety, people with school anxiety, people with peer anxiety. These are all real diagnoses that I've had come through my classroom with individualized education plans to accommodate their disabilities. And one of the accommodations that they always go to is extra time on tests. People who have depression and can't function under time conditions. We are teaching kids that the more fragile they are, the more special benefits they get. Teaching them that if they're tough and resilient and they overcome this and they're stoic and they don't have mental health issues that they don't have, that do not require extra benefits, then if they're stoic and they're resilient and they're tough, they don't get special benefits. They're actually ignored. They're actually put at a disadvantage, because it's clearly a disadvantage to have to take the test in 45 minutes while the other kid gets an hour and a half. Another example, not having to come into school at all. Attendance is optional if you have poor mental health in many cases. I was teaching at a school on Long Island, and this was at the very beginning of my career. I was a permanent sub, actually, for the first 4 months or so of my teaching career. Permanent sub means you come into the building every single day, and then if someone's absent, you go to their classroom and you fill in for them. It's just the first sub in the building, so then they don't have to call anybody and you can cover any unforeseen emergencies in case they can't get any subs on their call list. So I was there as a permanent sub every single day coming to the building. It was great. Loved it. Once in a while, there would be no teachers calling in sick, and there wouldn't be a regular classroom sub. It was pretty rare. It was a pretty big school. But once in a while, once every, 4 weeks or so, it would happen. And then they would say, well, why don't you go down to the attendance office and help in the attendance office? Okay, Frank. Okay. So I went down there, helped in the attendance office, and things were still on cards then. This was in the mid-90s. And I would help them sort the cards and place them in the right place. And the first couple of times I was down there, I noticed there was this giant, huge, thick stack of index cards for this one kid's attendance record. Everybody else just had a single attendance card where the absence was noted every time you checked it off. Well, this girl had been absent so many times that instead of an index card, she was working on her own like card catalog. Like she had the Dewey Decimal System going on for every day she was absent or something. I mean, we're talking a stack of index cards. So finally, after I'd been in there a couple times, you know, I asked, I said, Florence, what's with this girl? Why does she's like absent every single day? She's got this huge stack of index cards. And Florence says, oh yeah, she has school anxiety. She doesn't have to come in. I said, what? School anxiety? Turns out it's a thing. Yes, it is. And it's only become more common since then. And the school will have to reach out to them. School will provide extra services, whether that's a tutor, whether that's who knows what it is. But it is the school having to spend extra resources trying to accommodate that. Another example, special privileges that kids are getting, messages about having poor mental health, you get special privileges, special attention, college admissions. Your Go Ask Alice moment makes for a killer application essay, obviously, but also poor mental health, disability, that's diversity category at many colleges, and they are all about diversity. They need that diversity. They want that diversity. So it's actually a benefit. You might think learning disability, you might think poor mental health would be a detriment in college applications. Not so, my friends, not so. Now, this article from U.S. News, Lynn O'Shaughnessy, a couple of years ago, but Lynn was interviewing David Montesano. He's a college admissions strategist at a place called College Match Educational Consultants. They're a nationwide firm. And he says that colleges actually can look at your disability or your poor mental health as an advantage. I'll quote the article here. The clientele at his college admission practice includes learning disabled students. He's seen how learning challenges can actually benefit students during the application process. Colleges are looking for diversity. Having a learning disability represents a form of diversity. Then it goes on to talk about how learning disabilities could be all sorts of things, and they could be your standard old school disability, something like dyslexia, some sort of processing challenge or disability like that. But it can also be one of the so-called mental health disabilities. Anything that puts you in that category, anything that checks off a diversity box for the college. And this is all this stuff, this is not lost on students. The students see this. They're learning that having a disability, having mental challenges is a way to get ahead, to get special advantages. Another example for one of my own classes, poor mental health, giving you one-on-one tutor, being a fragile student, giving you that special attention. She got a student in my class one time, got a one-on-one tutor because she went to the guidance counselor and she said, oh, in my class, there is a boy whom, I don't think she said whom, but you know. I'll just say whom because she should have. There is a boy whom I dated. And when I was dating him, things were great, but then we broke up. And now it's really, really hard. It's destroying my mental health to go into class with this boy. So, did the school tell her to suck it up? No, they did not tell her to suck it up. They got her her own individual, private, one-on-one tutor. And then every day when class time came up, instead of going into my classroom with all the other students, she went down to the library and she had the school paid for a one-on-one tutor who met with her in the library. Wow. So it's worth pointing out too that how do you get these diagnoses? Because the school requires you to have some sort of medical professional sign off on these diagnoses so that you can get these special privileges. It costs money, right? So to get these special privileges, once again, you are talking about people with money. You're talking about perpetuating socioeconomic divides. You're talking about the rich get richer, the poor get poorer, or at least the poor don't get the special advantages that the rich are able to afford. It's a way of enforcing lower mobility. It's a way of enforcing the status quo, protecting what people have, instead of producing new wealth so everybody gets more. Yeah, so in the old days, used to be poor mental health, things were harder. Colleges didn't want you, harder to get your work, harder to learn. Now, poor mental health, disability gets you all kinds of benefits and privileges. People go out of their way, right, to get these diagnoses. They get them extra time on tests to be declared ADHD so they can get Ritalin or Adderall. How well are the students picking up on these messages? Well, it turns out they're picking up pretty well. Let's look at some heartbreaking numbers now. Rage-inducing numbers. I'm going to try not to yell into the microphone here. This is the title of this episode kind of now. We're going to get into how horrible the mental health state is in my school right now. How do we know the mental health state among the students in my school? Well, for one thing, I'd be pretty bad at my job if I couldn't actually tell, if I couldn't actually feel the mental state of the students in my classroom. I'm an extremely sensitive individual. Sometimes that is a disadvantage, but in my job, it is an extreme advantage. I've always been very lucky to be able to sense kids. But that's not evidence. That's not data. So let's look at some data. Every other year, the County Youth Bureau comes into our school and they do a survey. Now, of course, surveys are pretty close to the worst type of data, but it's the same survey that the CDC does nationally. The questions are identical to the national CDC survey. In fact, I have suspicions that our County Youth Bureau is doing this under the auspices of the CDC, although they did not say that when I contacted their local spokesperson here, or local coordinator, I should say, but I don't know. She might just not be aware, because the questions on our Youth Bureau survey here are identical to the questions on the CDC national survey. Good thing is that makes comparisons easy. So because of the pandemic of 2020, this was delayed a year, and there were 3 years in between our 2021 survey in the spring of 2021 and the previous survey before that. I am just going to focus on four questions here from this survey. This survey is about drug use. It is about bad habits. It's about vaping. It's about violence. It's about abuse. And it's about mental health. And I'm going to highlight four of these mental health questions for you. The first question is, have you seriously contemplated suicide in the last 12 months? Suicidal ideation, right? The second question is, have you formed a plan to carry out suicide, again, within the last 12 months? The third question is, have you actually attempted suicide? All these are in the last year, or 12 months, or 6 months, something like that time frame. And then the fourth question is, did you have to be hospitalized or seek out medical attention as the result of your suicide attempt? Well, how did my school do? It did absolutely terribly, horrifically bad. I can't actually believe that the school has not addressed this in a more strong way than they have. I'll get to that in a second. First, the results. So on the first question, this first question was, you know, have you seriously contemplated suicide? My school, 60% above the national average for the 2019 CDC survey. 60% increase, or maybe not increase for my school, because I do not have access to the full data set for 2018. I didn't request it. It's not there. And I requested it last year because I saw some terrible signs. So now I have the full set for last year's. Anyway, we're 60% above the national average at my school. Did every school across the land go up this much? Well, it seems like they might have. Texas There's this famous study that came out of Texas, right, that said basically all the girls in this study were 50% above national average. So these seem to be similar, right? Seem to be similar. Well, second question. Have you made a plan? My school, 40% above the 2019 national average. Upsetting. Third question, actually, amazingly, perhaps, slightly better than average, only 10% below. Maybe significant, maybe not, that 10% small margin there. The last question, have you had to be hospitalized or doctor's office seek out medical attention as a result of your suicide attempt? My school was 240% above the 2019 national average. 240% higher than average medical attention, hospitalization for suicide attempts. I don't even know how to process that. I've never encountered anything like that in my 25-year career. I've never seen a situation where I had to deal with that. So this data came to me about 4 months ago, and I've talked to our school board about it. I've talked to our administration about it. And to me, this is a flashing lights, emergency siren, code one, red alert type of situation. Try not to get too worked up about it right now, but that is absurd. You can't have 240% above the national average in something like hospitalization and medical attention for suicides without addressing it and making it your absolute number one point of focus. Figure out what's going on. Well, with respect to today's topic in terms of mental health at school and what kids are actually learning at school, if you just go by that data, yes, I would say they are learning pretty darn well that poor mental health gets rewarded in all kinds of ways at school these days. Unfortunately, our hidden curriculum is teaching them to the students to be mentally fragile. It's teaching them that it's incentivizing them, giving them incentives, giving them motivation to not be stoic, to not be resilient, to not be tough. They'll get cared for ever so much more, so many more privileges if they are, to quote Ally Sheedy in The Breakfast Club, a basket case. How much of this is due to this hidden curriculum, what we're teaching them? How much is due to the fact that we're taking away their dances? We force them to not touch at dances that do happen. We have to cover their faces with masks. They're taking away the proms, chance to be Claire in the Nutcracker or Sandy in Grease or captain of the football team, everything they've been sweating for all these summers under the hot suns, and then their varsity team just doesn't happen. No field trips, no science fairs, no robotics competition. Well, it's hard to say, right? But the two go hand in hand, probably some of both the hidden curriculum and the difficulties of the last few years, because of course, suicides have been going up. Teenage adolescent suicide, rather, has been increasing in the United States since right around 2007, 2008, when 13 Reasons Why was published. So it's been increasing since way before the pandemic started. Two more points for you. One, my kids are still in public school. My kids are still in our public school. And I think that on balance, it is the right place. It's a positive place. So don't get me wrong. I am pointing out one area where there is a lot of work that needs to be done. And it should be the absolute top priority for our school district and for most school districts around the country, because it does seem that this data seems to be replicated other places. Not all of it's been reported, of course, yet, so we don't know for sure. But just because the school is overall a net positive place and a good place for my kids and a good place for your kids, and I think it's great to be sending them there overall compared to, being an anchorite, staying at home and getting your lean cuisine dinner passed through a chink in the cement block wall to your cell where you're locked up with Netflix for 4 years, a hermit. I think the school can be a net positive place. And I'm not saying that homeschool is always like an anchorite locked in a cement block wall either. Homeschool can be an absolutely fantastic alternative. Brian Kaplan just posted the super story about his sons, Tristan and Aiden, and how well they are doing. And they're at Vanderbilt on a full ride scholarship now after their absolutely wonderful homeschooling journey. So homeschooling can be a super alternative too, but I am pointing out an area. Doesn't mean the schools are horrible overall, but it means that in this area, our schools absolutely are performing in a terrifically bad way. It's terrifying, in fact, terrifyingly bad. They need to improve on this number. So that's the first thing. I think the schools can still be and are still a positive place for the kids, but that doesn't mean that there aren't glaring places that we need to work on. And this is obviously one of them. The second point here, as we wrap things up on this segment, don't forget to check out the other piece of today's podcast too, but it's going to be uploaded in a separate file. So the second point here as we wrap things up is, I have to point out this. The Youth Bureau, when they did this survey in my school, they saw these numbers, you know, and they did one of these, whoa, and they held the paper out, and they looked at it from arm's length, and then they held the paper closer, and they looked at it from closer length, and they said, yeah, it's still bad, no matter how you look at it. It's frighteningly bad. Oh my gosh, what are we going to do? What did the Youth Bureau do? First thing, it's not the school, right? School is still working on its response. My school is still working on its response. So we're withholding grading them on this. The jury's still out. We'll see how things go because this data only came out in May. It's September now, and we are still responding to it. Things can unfortunately take some time. So for now, a pass for the school. But the Youth Bureau's response last spring. The Youth Bureau looked at these numbers, and what did they do? My God, man. They bought the kids ice cream. That was their response. They gave everyone in the school a $5 gift certificate. Oh, you got suicide hospitalization numbers through the roof? Here's some ice cream for you. $5. Go have a sundae. That'll fix you right up there, kid. Come on, come on. Who is doing this? Just the optics of that, giving kids ice cream because their suicidal ideations and the rate that they're going to the hospital is 240% above the national average. We'll give them a sundae. Maybe we'll even get a topping on there for you that's, you know, your favorite. We'll just give you a gift certificate. You can pick it out. Oh, who does that? Who teaches kids the way to deal with mental health issues is by eating ice cream? Not to mention this unbelievably cavalier attitude of let them eat ice cream. Oh, you've got horrific mental health? Let them eat ice cream. And the lack of follow through. You do this survey. You align it with the CDC down there in Atlanta. And you do all this work, you get this great data back, and then your follow-through, when you do get some glaring, flashing lights, siren numbers, your follow-through is to buy them ice cream. Please, we have to do better. These are our kids. We have to do better than that. All right, so that's what your kids are learning about mental health in school. Come back tomorrow, and we will learn more about what your kids are learning in school as this series continues. Take care.